This is an interview with Connie McCready at her home at 2407 Northeast 27th Street in Northeast Portland. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 24th, 1994. And this is tape 20, side 1. So was there anything else on that issue that you, on the sexual orientation discrimination resolution?
No, except that all of my opponents used it subversively.
Did they?
Yeah, but interesting thing, when people were going door to door for me, and they gather, pick up the stuff that, you know, the maps or things. And it was amazing how many folks showed up to help me.
Really?
After that.
Really?
I was just amazed. People I recognized from having been in council, or people who would tell the gal whose house that they would pick up the material from. And I thought, my golly, I hadn't expected this kind of fallout.
Uh-huh.
In some cases, it was really helpful, because nobody really likes going door to door. In some cases, I'm not so sure it was all that helpful. And some of the personalities involved, in our fairly conservative districts.
Right.
But I certainly admire, and that's the first time that I was actually aware of my stance on something, of people doing things for me, mm-hmm. after, when there was nothing more I could do for them.
Right.
It was, I was really touched, because I had not, in fact, very rarely did people even say thank you afterwards. Huh. People who had been lobbying you heavily on an issue.
Huh.
I didn't expect them to say thank you, but I was sort of surprised that, if you think about it, and I did think about it after that occasion, I thought, gee, that's nice. I just didn't expect that.
You've mentioned lobbying, and I was wondering whether the lobbying at City Hall is much different than it was in the legislature.
People bending your ear. There's not much difference. However, at legislature, so much of the lobbying was done by professional lobbyists,
mm-hmm.
whereas in the Portland City Council, it was they were primarily the individuals. And that's one of the things that I think it's important to try and keep that available to people. That's one of the reasons that I'm not, there are things against the commissioned form of government, but there are things for it. Folks can come and see the person who is in charge and can lobby them about and talk to them and get answers of why the street situation or the sewer situation or the light, whatever it is that affects them. If they want a traffic light at an intersection,
mm-hmm.
They can have it explained to them that we only have so much money, and that there's priorities, mm-hmm. and their method of choosing may not be perfect, but it's the best they can come up with. And folks so often will understand.
Right.
You know, logical people, even if they're disappointed, they're mm-hmm. not going to get something,
mm-hmm.
if they think they're being treated fairly,
mm-hmm.
and not have somebody pull, you know, doing things for somebody who's got the influence. But
one final note here. I did see that the resolution that you sponsored won 3-2 with Schwab and Ivancy voting against.
Okay, that's what I would have suspected.
I was wondering whether there was any other long-lasting repercussions from your involvement with that issue.
Oh, yeah, the election, all through, I had all kinds of letters and calls and people, and during the campaigning, the lobbying and stuff, they were threatening to lead the opposition to my mm-hmm. election or re-election, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't under any doubts as to what I had stirred up. I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, do you feel that you made the right decision?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. No, I never questioned it. I felt badly that was the outcome. But I knew that bit by bit I was killing myself in the council. But I've always said, you got to do what you got to do. And I felt that was what I had to do.
Was there a particular person or incident or testimony that really swayed your mind, changed your opinion about it?
No, I'm just trying to think. At the time, there were some who were far more articulate. There were several friends who had told me how they had wanted to be out of the closet. They mm-hmm. just didn't feel it was honest, and yet they didn't have the guts to take it on because of the potential bad things mm-hmm. that could come of it. Loss of friendships, loss of jobs, or having trouble in the jobs or whatever. I don't know. I listened to everybody that came to see me on mm-hmm. both sides and made up mm-hmm. my mind. I don't think there was any particular person.
Well, going on, there were some reviews of the public perception of City Hall in the papers, in both Willamette Week and the Oregonian. It was in 1975. And it gave sort of a mixed view on council performance. I don't know how much you would adhere or listen to these polls and perceptions. But in the Oregonian, the consensus was of a lot of people that the council spends too much time bickering and too little time solving people's problems. That was one
perception.
Well,
that's pretty simplistic, but by and large, I think that's true. Well, first of all, the press, by its nature, mm-hmm. they're always looking for something to write about, and there's nothing very exciting about sewer permits and septic tank permits and a lot of the stuff that we did that was mm-hmm. routine. But they wouldn't write anything about that stuff. But if there was an exchange, a sharp exchange, they'd find that interesting. The people, it doesn't speak very well for human nature, but that's what folks seem to read, and they see it in all the time, and they don't realize mm-hmm. that that's one little piddly thing out of, let's see, I'd say 9, 10, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11. Say, out of 14 hours of constant association during the three council sessions a week, that some little comment, and if nothing big is on the agenda, they have to feel they have to turn something in, and they'll put that quip. One time they quoted me, and I don't even remember that I said it, but it was so long ago and it's been picked up a lot since then. But at one council session, I said to Neil, slow down, I can't listen that fast. And Porter picked that up and put it in the story that it wasn't about any particular issue, I'm sure.
Well, you never know what's going to spark an article on
something
like
this.
Yeah,
and you never know. I mean, he may have been going that fast so that we wouldn't be questioning him, the logic. You know, he can make something sound. But anyway, it wasn't any big deal. Mm-hmm. But they used it because it was funny, I guess. And it has been used a lot since. I've heard him.
Speaking of Goldschmidt, there was one comment that Goldschmidt wants everything his own way as a public perception.
Oh, that's, they're all right on that one.
And then also the Willamette Week said, collective wisdom has it that there are two sides to every issue. But in the Portland City Council chambers, every issue has five sides. Is that an exaggeration or is that true, you think?
Well, I wouldn't say five sides, but there were... what they're saying is correct in the context that they're saying it, but each person has his own vote. But I got so that I could pretty well call the shots on how they were going to go and on most things.
How did you feel about the neighborhood association and their increased involvement?
Well, that was Neil's baby, and I wasn't wild about the idea because I felt that every person who testifies on something or feels on something is entitled to have his or her view and to be treated as an individual on it. And I was concerned that neighborhood associations would become a lobbying block, that they would get more power by numbers.
Yeah, right.
I know that so many of my fellow commissioners, and when I served on the Metropolitan Service District, the representatives of the other smaller jurisdictions, like the Washington County Commission and the mayor of some of the smaller towns, some of the people there were just absolutely panicky from two or three letters or two or three people who were against something, and I thought, you ought to be sitting in city council and try 200 and 300. But anyway, they were intimidated and would tend to go along, spend hours listening to those two or three, because we didn't have many people come to the Metropolitan Service District meetings. And I was surprised, for example, with Mike Lindbergh when he came on. I knew him for an intelligent public works administrator, and I'd hired him for that, and he did. And he was very strong in his beliefs, and he would stand by them. But boy, when he came onto the council, what a wimp! I knew how he would vote by counting the House. If the House was, the people were there in numbers, were on one side in the gathering, that's how he was going to vote. And I knew, I mean, I didn't hold it against him, except that I knew that he didn't believe it was right, his vote. He wouldn't look at me when he'd vote with the numbers. He'd look away. And I was really surprised to see him chicken out. And so knowing that about so many of the commissioners, Frank would count the numbers, Mildred would count the numbers. I don't know about, I don't think Charles Jordan did. And Neil did if it didn't matter, if the issue wasn't one that
he was,
that he really felt
about,
strongly about, why he would sometimes surprise me with his vote for the numbers. So my feeling was that you start creating these bodies and giving them sort of a... I had no objection to their creating their own bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, if the city creates these neighborhood associations, and then, and his wish was to staff them, and then to have another body above them, a regional... was his first proposal, was to have the neighborhood associations, and then there was a regional, like, for four or five associations.
And did that ever happen?
I don't think that one happened. If it did, it only happened in one area, like southeast Portland. I think they had a beginning of a thing like that of their own. But I had no objection to their doing their own. I just didn't want it to be a formal... a thing done by the city to get to legalize something, and then I felt it was going to force an individual to go to those meetings.
Oh, I see.
To get something done that he was perfectly entitled to come before the council on his own. And sure enough, after they created it, with my no vote, people would, the neighborhood association would bring in something and as a proposal, and depending on the association, some were better than others. Some nobody ever attended, and it turned out, as I suspected, in that the boards made the decisions because nobody went to the general meetings.
Right.
And so they'd come and propose something, and if anybody would show up against it in council, they would say, that person has never shown up at the meeting when we were discussing it. Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing that says a person has to go to a neighborhood association. And I've been to enough of them to think they're no fun, and there's a lot of self-important people. Mm-hmm. There's some wonderful people. There's some marvelous public-spirited people that go to those, but there's an awful lot of people who like to have the PTA president syndrome.
And how did you feel about the increased participation, individual participation at the city council? You were in favor of that then? I mean, was that a problem?
Oh, that's okay. That was okay. Sure, it's a problem because there's only so much time, and I hated cutting people's testimony time down to like 5 minutes and 3 minutes. A lot of times they're giving him 1 minute. Well, what kind of person has that kind of organization to be able to put all of his thoughts together so they just kind of get up and ape?
Well, how would commissioners, how would they communicate with their public? How would they find out what the public wanted other than the public that would come to the council sessions?
Well, they'd go to meetings in the neighborhood. There were lots of neighborhood meetings held well before
the neighborhood association.
Usually they were put together by someone who felt, or a group who felt, that they wanted a street or a sewer or a traffic light or some kind of an issue that affected the neighborhood in general, and they would get folks together and they'd pass out flyers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they'd contact first your office and see if you would come and talk to them or listen to them, whatever it was, and that was fine. And we'd usually, I'd go whenever I could, particularly if they called me first and established a time and then circulated. Mm-hmm. I was so horrified by this group. I forget the man who wrote the book, but it was a thing, what's the name of that group of people who would cause?
Common Cause?
No. Is Common Cause the one where they have a format that
it's
they...
It's national? It's a national?
Well, I think this became national. It's, I think maybe that's it. And they were, it wasn't their fault. There were some very fine, sincere people who joined it and belonged to it. But the format was set up. I told Neil about this. I was asked to come to this thing, and he said, stay away. And he said, these people, they've got a format, and it's to shout you down, and it's a bunch. And you're not supposed they don't allow you to talk. They'll ask you a question, and then you're supposed to answer yes or no. And if you start to explain it, they'll cut you off. And rude. Oh, and I think it was Common Cause. Isn't that terrible? My age is beginning to show again.
Well, there were a couple perceptions about commissioners and their constituencies, which Willamette Week referred to, and I thought I'd run these quotes by you. One was, quote, the mayor and Ivancy have the most solid political bases on that council. They're in touch with their constituencies in the community. They feel secure and relaxed in dealing with pressure issues, observes one city hall regular, but the others don't. Do you feel that way?
I think that's probably true. Neil, oh my goodness, did he ever have an organized constituency? And they were young. I think I've told you how the gals would come in and sit there and look adoringly up at him. Oh, they worshipped him. Nobody would take issue with Neil. Only one or two of his staff members ever argued with him.
Were their constituencies ideologically based?
Well, I think in the case of Neil, it was his... he had a wonderful rapport that he could be so, what's the word?
Charismatic?
Yes. Oh, could he ever. He could be a great snake oil salesman. Wonderful. Oh, and he could put it on with a trowel and these, it was something that Wayne Morse had. To begin with, I remember Al going around with him when he was on his fence mending tour. Al was assigned to cover it when he was flying into town, and he would, this little plane would land, and these people would be out there with these big signs, and there was lynch mobs there, and Al said it was very nervousing to be around him, even because these people were threatening him. Changed parties or gone independent or whatever it was at that particular time, and they were just terrible. And by the time Morse got through talking to him, they'd be standing there, and then they'd start to nod, you know. And while they may not have kissed his feet, they weren't chasing him with the signs. Well, Neil has that ability. It's amazing what he can do with disparate groups, but. He had plans, so when you say philosophically, yeah, a lot of them, the young people, and they wanted change. Mm-hmm. They wanted change, and he embodied change to them, all the old graybeards, as they called them, who used to be on the council. Mm-hmm. And age, they had to be his age, you know.
What about Ivan C.?
Ivan C., yes and no. I don't think that he was aware that he... When they said they were comfortable with a constituency, maybe so. I know that he played
the blue-collar worker?
The blue-collar, you bet. Mm-hmm. And he played up to them all the time, and he had them almost unanimously. I think I told you about the poll, and mm-hmm. educationally, and labor unions, and that was his... However, he certainly had fat cat support. Big monies that came in from...
Well, wasn't that similar to, say, like, on a national level, the way Richard Nixon operated? I mean, he had the big businessman support, but he also was able to get to the silent majority of blue-collar workers in America that felt like they agreed with his more socially conservative... approach to issues.
That's probably true. I didn't pay that much attention. I couldn't stand Nixon right from the very beginning. From the do you believe in Tinkerbell?
Checkers.
Clap if you believe in Tinkerbell. Oh. His checker speech.
Yeah.
When it was through, I turned to Al and just said, "Clap if you believe in Tinkerbell." It was god awful. I couldn't stand him. And so I would be a poor one to ask. I was shocked
I was wondering
that he was elected.
A parallel between that kind of personality and Ivan C.
Probably.
Yeah, but, well, there was another question here, which I thought was quite interesting in Willamette Week. Somebody said, "Do we want elected officials to work well together?" Asks one longtime city government employee. "I think we want them to represent many viewpoints, just as society is made up of many viewpoints. Arguing is necessary to reach the compromises and the tough decisions." Going back to this complaint about all the bickering.
Yeah. Now, that makes a lot of sense to me, because when it was calm and placid when I first went on the council, and I didn't go down those stairs with this big knot in my stomach, dreading having to go in there and take Neil on. Oh, I hated it. Or Frank, or Mildred, but primarily Neil in those days. And It wasn't like that at all. It was really very calm, 99% of the time. But I don't think that that's the greatest thing in the world for good decision making, because we didn't question each other. It was more of a politeness and a confidence. In my case, I had confidence in the judgment of the people, and misplaced in some occasions, but and we didn't seem to have the heavy issues. Maybe it was the times or the things that were brought up, but anyway, I think the man who said that, I should say woman.
yeah, I don't know who.
Was that made a lot of sense.
Well, going on, you've talked a little bit about the Mount Hood Freeway debate, and that had come up at this time, and so I thought maybe, I'm not sure exactly how much detail we got on that, but maybe you could just kind of review how you came to that decision. I think that we've talked about it pretty much.
I think we have too. I just initially I was all for the Mount Hood Freeway. I didn't think it made any sense for the people in the Southeast Portland to complain about having the swath cut through their neighborhood. They would then drive through and make heavy traffic for everybody else's neighborhood to get up north to take the freeway that goes through my neighborhood. Or it made sense to have routes in all sections of the city. And then after we went, and I think we talked about all the hassle where Neil didn't allow his staff to help my staff, but I assigned my staff to study it.
One of your staffers, Jennifer Wilcox, said, "We stayed up nights. Connie has taken it personally as well as politically. She lost friendships with that vote."
I did. It was just made me sick. I had a great deal of respect for the man. He was a banker that I put on the that I named to the study to study the Mount Hood Freeway. All of our commissioners named someone to this task force that Neil proposed, and this guy was I don't know how he felt initially, but when I talked to him, I probably told him that I thought it was a good idea, and I was in favor of it at that point, you know, whatever, but they were to study it. And they came back, and the task force recommended that the Mount Hood Freeway be built, and he was one of the votes that way. And after I examined the various portions of the recommendations, and then after Jennifer showed me these damning things in the books that were published by the consulting firm that they were listening to, and I'm sure that they couldn't possibly have gone through that. Nobody would have had time to have held down a job and have done this on the side too. And I just couldn't accept that. All this property that would be taken off the tax rolls. It would have been something like, I can't remember now, about two blocks, not to mention 40-foot streets. This huge swath through the city, which would not be producing any taxes, so the rest of us would have all had to pick up the rest. The tax was still going to be the same amount of money. The whole pie was a certain amount of money, and you divide it amongst all the people, and when you take all those people off of the tax roll, the rest of us picked it up, and then it wasn't going to solve anything. I won't go into all these details, but I finally and reluctantly, I fought against myself all through this thing, because I just hated to do that, and I felt badly about this man that I had put on who'd given so much of his time, and he was a good-sized official with the bank. He wasn't a clerk or a teller, and putting him to it, and then for him to take on that job and the commissioner that he represented to turn against him was just, but I thought, Connie, you can't in any conscience do that. And
but it must be a lot of stress for you to come to those decisions.
Oh, it was terribly stressful. Mm-hmm. And there were arguments on the other side. It wasn't as if it was just, black and white. There were a lot of grays and stuff. But by the time it boiled down, I just felt I had to do that. But it, and I lost a lot of votes for that. Mm. And that was one of the issues that people referred to as calling me, wishy-washy or can't make up my mind.
Yeah,
what was the phrase? Not wishy-washy, but flibbertigibbet.